the beginning of Perek Beis, Vayhi B'chodesh Nisan Shnasasim Li'artach Shast HaMelech. It was in the Chodesh Nisan, in the 20th year of Achartasht, the king. And we discussed it a few times. Does that refer to Koiresh? Does this refer to Daryavish? We don't like Rashi, very simply. It refers to Daryavish. Yayim Lefanov. There was wine before him, before the king. And here Nehemiah is the Sar HaMashkim. V'esoes Hayayin, I lifted up the wine, V'etino Lemelech, and I handed it to the king. I was not evil before him. Now, what does that mean? That's a very strange expression. Let's see the Rashi first. Rashi li'artach shast hu daryavish. This refers to daryavish. Rashi l'shitosai from the beginning of Perek Aleph. We're referring to the 20th year in the malchus of daryavish ben Esther, which means that this is taking place many years after. Now, after Ezra has arrived in Eretz Yisrael. And okay, the Alshem, why is he called Artachshast? Because didn't we have that word Artachshast in reference to Koresh in Sefer Ezra? The answer is yes. But the word Artachshast is a generic term which refers to the leader of Persia. Similar to Avimelech is the leader of the Pelishtim, similar to Pyro, the leader of Egypt. Are there other examples? Avimelech and Paro, maybe there's some other examples, but here we have another word for it. The king of Persia was Artachshast. V'alshem ha-malchus nikukach yayin lefanav yayin lefnei ha-melech b'chotzer. He brought wine before the king in the courtyard. That's very curious why Rashi says courtyard. I do not know. And we learn in the Megillah, so we have the chatzar ha-melech. So maybe this is taking off. Why doesn't it say that he brought him wine in his palace, indoors, outdoors? I do not even know where Rashi got this from. Where did Rashi find the hint that I brought Yayin Lefanov? It's a very interesting Rashi. The Chotzer. I lifted up the kois I gave to the king. The one that brings the wine in the courtyard of the king does not lift it up and give it to the king. He picks it up and gives it to the king. Okay, so this is the custom that it was handed over. A person delivers the yayin from the kitchen, he gives it to the Sar HaMashkim, and the Sar HaMashkim is honored, a special dignitary is honored by handing the wine to the king. Rashi does not...
Sar HaMashkim serve? I thought they had someone to taste the wine.
Yes, he was the one. The Sar HaMashkim was the one who tasted the wine.
To make sure it's not poison.
Exactly. But it wasn't more than just tasting the wine. It was more of an honor. It was a kavod of giving, handing over the wine, the last one, ceremony to relay the wine to the king. Okay, let's see. V'lo ha'yisi ra lefanav. Anido, here is the Rashi explains. V'lo ha'yisi anilo ha'yisi ragel yos ra lefanav b'roy aponim ki im sameach v'toyv leiv. I was always cheerful. That was always critical. That when you work before the king, you have to be in good spirits. If a person is depressed, if he's roya ponim, that can have that's contagious, and that the king gets very upset. So here Nehemiah is saying that he was always customarily, always very good spirits before the king, and that's what's going to trigger, because now Nehemiah is not in a good mood, as we're going to see in the next couple of psukim, because he has received this report from Hanani that the situation here at Yisrael is very, very horrible. It's very severe. There's a lot of tzaras taking place in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he did not look. His appearance is not what it used to be. That's what this pasuk is coming to allude to. V'lo ha'yisi ra lefanav. That in the past I was not ra lefanav, but today I was. Today I was ra. I did not look the way I looked in the past, and that's what triggered the king to ask, what is wrong with you, Nehemiah? Why are you in a sour state? Yeah. Ro'im hayom, the same expression, ro'im, the same word, ro.
Malva makes an interesting point over here, and he says that the king wanted them to look, if they had a sour expression, maybe they're up to something.
Right, exactly. There's some type of rebellion. They're going to kill them. So, okay, so it's interesting. One more time, Rashi. The Mefarshim point out, I saw this somewhere, I don't remember where I saw this, is they compare Nehemiah to Daniel. Daniel, if we remember, towards the end of Daniel, when Daniel was shown a vision of what is going to be Be'achris Hayam, the Kates Hayam, and the entire, he was presented with a vision of the entire world history, of what's going to happen, all the Dalai Malch, and now he's the Dalai Malchios. And he witnessed the greatest horrors in his vision. And he says he only was able to write down just a sample, just a mashahu of what he actually was seeing. And it says that he was terrified. But immediately thereafter, he had this horrible vision of what's going to be. He went back to work, and he was able to completely hide it. His face was pleasant, cheerful, as if nothing has happened. That was an incredible talent. That was something which only Daniel was able to do, but here Nehemiah was unable. It would appear that Nehemiah would try his best. As we go to the Sefer from the Malbim, the king would suspect that Nehemiah was up to no good. If your face is ra, you're rebelling, you may be trying to poison, to kill me, there's something going on, there's a conspiracy. So Nehemiah would want to do his utmost to be cheerful and pleasant. In fact, he would come to the king with a request. He wants to take leave, and he wants to go to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the walls. The king would be more willing to let him go if he's in a good mood. If he's in a sour mood, the king's not going to be so quick to let him go. Maybe he feels there's some type of rebellion. So it appears that Nehemiah would want very much to put on a good face, that everything is fine and well. But the tsar was so great, he was unable to do so, as we're going to see in the next pasuk. And the king says, why is panecha ro'im? Why is your face evil? Why do you have this sour face? But Daniel was on a higher madrega. Daniel, after witnessing the horrors of what would happen throughout the entire world history, was able to put on a nice smile and show everything is going to be fine and good. Now there is something also, let's see, there is something... I want to just tell you a vard. Now that we're talking about being the Sarah Mashk, I'm going to tell you a vard. It's also Negi Purim, and from the Reish Harav. I probably once told this to you, but I think it's very appropriate for this pasuk. The Reish Harav takes note that there are in Tanakh we find in at least in Klal Yisrael two different situations where a person drinks wine. We find where a person drinks wine, l'niv yayim, the yayin was only created in order l'nachem es ha'avelim, to give comfort to mourners. And the pas tenu shechar l'oived v'yayin l'mori nefesh. If I'm not mistaken, that's the correct pasuk. Give yayin, shechar, intoxicating beverage to the oived, to a person that suffered a loss, and yayin to a person who is bitter. And indeed it was customary, this is the Gemara Moed Katan and the Shulchan Aruch, that after the mace was buried, they would come to the mourners and they would serve yayin. Yayin would be served to comfort the mourners. Yayin has a koach, not just to cause a person to rejoice, to be happy. When Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah to drink yayin. Yayin is a tool which brings out emotion.
Escape.
An escape of emotion. Well, if you want to find comfort, wine is a tool which will help you express, to bring out the emotion of nechama, of comfort. If a person is searching to be in a state of joy, of simch, of extreme joy, yayin can help a person raise his emotional state to a higher state of joy. It's a means to bring out emotion. And you have the option of, depending on your mood, of going either way. What kind of emotion you want to express. Yayin is a tool. When it comes to, and we find this, because yayin obviously is something which is used for simcha, Purim, the Yom Tov of Mishta Yayin, on Yom Tov and Shabbos, the meaning of drinking wine to bring out simcha, but it's a pasuk that yayin is served to people who are suffering, who are distraught, who are in a tsar, and need to escape from their pain, need to be uplifted to find comfort. They're not looking for joy. They're just looking for nechamas, a very different emotion. But there's a very big difference in the way the wine is served. When the wine is served to a person, Rachmana Litzlan, who is a mourner, the pasuk says, Tenu, give the wine. Tenu yayin la'oved, tenu tshechar la'oved v'yayin la'mari nefesh. You don't take the wine by yourself. The wine is given to you. But when a person is in a state of simcha, we don't find anywhere that he served the wine. When you're in a state of simcha, you take the wine yourself. And the Reish Rav uses this to explain the Nazir. The Nazir, after he abstains from Yayin for 30 days, and he goes through the process of Nazirus, the Torah says, V'achar kein yishte ha-Nazir Yayin. So what does it mean? So now there's an inyan that now that after 30 days of not drinking wine, now you should drink wine. So the Reish Rav says a homiletic drush, it's a bracha. The Torah is giving you a bracha. You should only drink wine in a state where you yourself will take the wine. You should never be in a situation where someone will serve you the wine. Because if someone is serving you the wine, that's not a good sign. That means you're a mourner to new. But if you're taking the wine yourself, that means it's mitoch simcha. The achar kein yishte hanazir yayin. It's a bracha. Now that you have gone through this process of nazirus, which is a very high level of kedusha, you should be blessed. That in life you should not suffer any tragedy where someone will have to give wine, but instead the wine that you will drink throughout your life will only be when you take the wine yourself. Now with this we can understand something very deep in Pesach. Pesach is a hakpada. There's a hakpada that the yayin you should not pour your own wine. Someone shall pour the wine for you. The doubt, but the question is, but the Dal Kosos are Kneged, the Dal L'Shoynes of Geula. The four cups of wine on Pesach simply are Yayin Shel Cheirus, of celebration, of joy. So the answer is, that's exactly the point. Everything on Pesach, if you look very carefully, is bittersweet. There's matzah. Matzah, on the one hand, is Lechem Oni. It's poor man's bread. We reminisce the suffering in Egypt, but on the other hand, the matzah represents cheres. Shlei hispik b'tzeichem l'hachmitz at shehigla lehem melech malchim lachim. We left in haste. Cheres. So when you eat matzah, it's bittersweet. On the one hand, we remember that we were slaves, lechem only, poor man's bread, but also represents that Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt in one shot. Maror al matzos umirom yochum maror is bitter. But on the other hand, we're eating it with Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach represents Cheres. Eat Karban Pesach with Marah. So everything that we do by the Seder, we recline, but it's also it's a Zeman of Cheres, but it's also the same day of this Pesach is going to be the Tisha B'Av. Everything about Pesach is bittersweet. There is Cheres, and there is sadness. And you see that also by wine. The wine clearly represents the Dal L'Shonus of Geula, Cheirus and Simcha, but the wine is served to you. It's not given to you. You don't take the wine yourself. It's given to you to fulfill what it says in the pasuk, Tenu Yayin Yeshechar L'Oived V'Yayin L'Mari Nefesh. The only place where it says that the wine shall be given to you, shall be served to you, is only when a person is drinking the wine mitoch tsar, not mitoch simcha. Mitoch simcha, we have no makar that you it shall be served. It shall be served to you, but there we find the yayin is always the wine is taken by yourself. So it's interesting over here. That's an idea when it comes to yayin. So what's interesting over here is when it comes to the sar hamashkim. The sar hamashkim is always the one who gives the wine. So it's very interesting is that by the goyim. They don't have. I don't know what it means. I'm just sort of opening up an idea that over here, especially Rashi. Rashi tells us that it's even a two-step process. Rashi points out that wine is first brought. You expect Sar Mashkin. They work in the kitchen, right? That's what you think. That's what you think. He works in the kitchen. He imports the wine. He goes to the store. He goes out into the vineyard. He makes the wine. Manufactures the wine. And okay, also it's a side thing. He also gives the cup of wine to the king to drink. No, it appears that the other rabbi, the one in the kitchen, there are other people in charge of manufacturing and producing the wine. The sar mashkim is nothing more than a ceremonial position where you are the middleman in between those that that are bringing wine out from the kitchen to giving the wine to the king. You are the one that is tenu yayin. You're the one that's giving the wine to the king. Yeah.
So how do you explain? You give the chas and kala under the chuppah. You give them the wine.
Who says you give them? Is it called you give them?
Them taking it.
Is there a hakpada? Is there a hakpada that they should be given to them? They don't take it themselves. No. By the seder, I don't know. It's a practical. Hey, this is a drush. It's not obviously. It's not. Yeah. In Shulchan Aruch, it's a halach. It's a hakpada. By the seder, you should not pour your own wine.
Right.
I'm not aware. I'm not aware anywhere. What?
Usually,
someone picks it up. You're right. But there is.
Is there? It's not you.
Right, someone pick. I don't really give it. Someone there picks it up. They pick it up. They pick it up for you. Is that called giving it to you? Maybe it is. Maybe you're right. I don't know. Okay, this is an idea. Okay, I don't have answers. There are a lot of questions. It's just an idea that you this is a idea. It's not my idea. This idea from the Reish Rav. The Reish Rav. Reish Rav. His name was Rav Aaron Levine. He was my great grandfather.
That's how you pronounce it.
Raisha. Some pronounce it Raisha, Raisha, Raisha.
Raisha.
Different pronunciations. The more American version is Raisha. The more Hasidish Raisha.
The Raisha.
Raisha. Okay, the Raisha. Raisha.
Father also
does. Okay, he went to
Raisha.
Teraisha, okay. So, but this is an idea, it's a Jewish, and it's a Pasuk. Tenu is a Hakpadon Tenu. And he ties it into the Acharkein Yishte Hanozir Yain. Yishte means drink yourself. Doesn't say the wine shall be given to you. And that opens up, if there is truth to this idea, that opens up a whole new world to understand what is the tafkid of Asar Hamashkim. Asar Hamashkim simply is to taste the wine, in charge. But we learn from Rashi here in this pasuk. See, that's why we bring this in over here. So if you say, okay, there's Asar Hamashkim, there's a butler, a person in charge of the bread, there's a person in charge of the wine, there's a person in charge of setting the tables and the servants and making sure everything is clean and so on and so forth. But here Rashi is telling us, no, let's be very clear, what is the role of the Sar Hamashkin? It's not to go to the vineyard and manufacture the wine. The purpose of Sar Hamashkin is, as this Rashi, very unique Rashi, you're not going to find such a Rashi almost anywhere in Chazal, where Rashi says the purpose of the Sar Hamashkin is, Rashi elaborates, look at me one more time, where's the Rashi, I lifted up the wine, V'anochi nasasi es kais hayayin v'nasati el melech v'chein v'chein hu aminok. Okay, talk about minhagim. The chen hu aminok, shahanei v'yayin b'chotzer, the one that brings the wine to the courtyard. Hamelech einoi noisei v'nois noi lamelech. You don't give it to the king. The one that goes into the kitchen to get the wine, to prepare the wine, he doesn't give it to the king. Aval the sar hamashkim mekabel kois hayayin miyad hamevi v'hu. The role of the Sar HaMashkin is nothing more than to pick up the cup and give it to the king. That's the role of the Sar HaMashkin.
Rambam explains the dream that there were four people.
Yeah.
It says Mashkeh,
yeah.
And Sar HaMashkin, Sar Ofeh, is four people.
Aha, two different parts of the process.
That's
okay.
Why I don't want to take up time.
So it's good. So yeah, you
so
see.
He says that that's why Yosef's dream went against the grain.
Right.
His interpretation. Because the Sar HaMashkeh. All he had to do was look in the cup to see the flan. He had nothing to do with making
preparing it.
The guy who baked the bread would have been responsible, but not the sorrow.
Because the sorrow just gives it. He just
wasn't any responsibility. But nevertheless, Yosef, the scuttlebutt was that the offer was going to be the sorrow offer wouldn't be responsible
because he just hands it over.
Saramashka was because he didn't have to go inside to search. So he said. So the next time, but he said they didn't learn from their dream. When the next day, Kasher Yisamashkeu, he gave them both back their positions. But the Sar HaMashkeh learned from his and made sure he looked at the wine before he gave it to the king. The Sar Ofer just went ahead and gave the king the bread without checking it first to see if it had any splinters or rocks or whatever it is. And that's why he decided at that moment to kill him.
At a later point in time. Okay. It's very interesting. But this is an interesting Rashi, where you see Rashi clearly says what the minig was in the process of what the Sar Mashal. Okay, let's now go to the next pasuk. The Melech said to me, Madu Ponecha Roim, why is your Ponecha Roim? Not like Daniel. Daniel was able to hold it in. You're not able to hold it in. What is going on with you? Madu Ponecha Roim, you're not sick. As far as I know, I suspect foul play. I suspect a conspiracy. There's something going on over here. Vo'ira, so Nehemiah says, I was terrified. Vo'ira, harbe me'ot. I was very afraid, very taken aback. I was terrified. Who knows? My life was on the line. You could have had me killed that moment in time. Vo'imar la'melech. I said to the king, Pasuk Gimel, ha'melech la'olam yichya. Long live the king. Chas v'shalom. Let me explain to you why I'm upset. Madua lo yeru'u fonai. Why? So it's interesting what he says. He made it a question. Like, this is the real Jewish way to answer with a question. See, the real Jewish way. He answered with a question. Madua lo yeru'u fonai. Why should my face not be evil? Asher, I have received an evil report. Asher hu ir beis Kivrois Avosa, the ancestral burial place of my land, my father's, Chareva is destroyed. Ushorecha ukulu voesh, and its gates have been consumed by fire. So before, all the Mepharshim point out, this is a very sensitive issue to the Persians, because the Persians worshipped the ancestral plots of their forefathers. So they were very sensitive to this, that wherever your father is buried is sacred land. So here Nehemiah was using that to his advantage and referred to Yerushalayim not just as the holy city. We think about the Yerushalayim. We generally, I don't know, you're not allowed to bury. No one's allowed to be buried in Yerushalayim. People that bury, they're buried outside the old city. So we don't think of Yerushalayim as a place where our forefathers are buried. We think of Yerushalayim as the place where the Shekhinah is resting. It's the holy place, the Beis HaMikdash. But being that in Persia, they did worship cemeteries where their parents and grandparents were buried. So Nehemiah used that to his advantage to explain that Yerushalayim is the place where his parents and grandparents and forefathers are buried, and therefore I'm very disturbed. Let's pass it down. The Melech said right away, he agreed. Okay, you're my loyal servant. I can relate to your request. What do you want? Okay, I understand now. I understand you have received a report. Hanani has arrived and has told you what is going on in Eretz Yisrael. You're very upset. I understand. What do you want? How can I help you? You've been good to me. How can I reciprocate? Now, suddenly, Nehemiah, vo'espalel el Elokei Hashemayim, I began to pray to Hashem. Before I made my formal request, he paused and was mispalel to Hashem. Let's see some of the Rashi's pasuk beis v'ato ein chochol v'harei ein atochole. I guess he had his medical history. He had a doctor there on premises and determined that he was not sick. And the reason why his face was sour was because there was something bothering him. You're trying to poison me. It's difficult to understand that, because if he had to taste, we assume that the Sahamashkin would taste the wine before it was served to the king. So did he suspect that he was a suicide bomber? He was going to kill himself?
And also the Rashi earlier doesn't even mention.
That's a very good point. I was thinking about that. Rashi earlier does not mention that the Sar HaMashkim, you would think that the most important part of the minog was that the Sar HaMashkim would sip from the cup. And there's no record of that. There's no mention. Even though we learned yesterday, he was called Heter Shosa, Hatar Shosa, because of the two words, the composite, Heter Shosa, they allowed him to drink from the Yayin, even though the Yayin was halachically Yayin Nesach. And here when Rashi goes through this long elaboration, this elaboration of what is the process of the role of the Sar HaMashkim, he makes no mention. I don't know. It's a very good point. I don't know the answer. But over here, he's suspecting that there is some type of, maybe you're immune to the poison, or you have some type of antibody that's going to, you'll be spared, but I'm going to die. And therefore, he suspected Nehemiah of foul play. Vo'iro, next Rashi, when I was very afraid, v'nis yoresi me'od al-kach, I was terrified, shelo ya'al Lil Olai Hamelech Alil, the Melech should not accuse me, suspect me of some accusation, some foul play. So then he responded to Pasuk Gimel, well, why not? he a rhetorical question. Madu lo yeru ufonai. Madu lo yihu ponai roim. Ashahir Yerushalayim shehi base kivers avosai choreva. Again, that's very strange because you're not allowed to be buried in Yerushalayim. No one is allowed to be buried in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to be marbetuma, and yet he calls it the place of the burial place of my forefathers. Very strange. And pasuk dalid, what do you want? Alma. Fine, I understand. I can relate to your request. What you want, I'll grant it. For espalel, v'amad lufnei hamelech betfilasi kein yeratzon milufnei elokei hashamayim. And I said before the king betfilasi. So Rashi here is very difficult. What's going on here in the next few psukim? It's hard to really. I don't really have a clear kind of Rashi. But v'amarti lifnei hamelech, I said before the king bitzvilasi, kein yihi yeratzon, may it be the will milifnei lokei hashamayim, shetamale she'ilasi uva koshasi. So what appears is, he responded by being mispalel to Hashem. In other words, this is the way I think Rashi is saying, he answered him, the king, Daryavish, I'm going to pray to Hashem, and you should listen to my prayer, and that's what I want you to help me do. It's a very strange type of request. You go to a person, you go to the President of the United States, prayer, what do you want? Say, well, you listen. I'm going to talk to God, and you listen to my tefillah, and you help. You make my God, you be God's agent to make my request come true. That seems how Rashi appears to learn the Pshat and Pasuk, because that's what he says. He says, "V'espalel l'lokei hashamayim." I pray to God, not their hearts. If you're talking to the king, Melech Basav Adam, you don't all of a sudden take a break and start saying, "Time out, I want to go talk to God, and I'll get back to you in 5 minutes." So the answer is no, I'm going to respond to you directly. But the way I'm going to respond to you is by relaying the bakash I have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you will understand and you shall participate and assist and do anything within your power to make my bakasha to the Ribbono Shel Olam come true. So let's see the next pasuk. Pasuk Hey V'oimar LaMelech. Now according to Rashi, it's not clear. It's according to Rashi, it seems v'amar lamelech. There's much discussion with commentators. Who is the melech? Is the melech here like in the Megillah? Every time it says the word melech in the Megillah, it refers certainly to the melech malchei hamlochim hakadosh baruch hu, or does the word melech here refer to melech Daryavish? So according to Rashi, if you take it, I don't know. You can really go either way in Rashi. Let's learn now that he said to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's speaking to hakadosh baruch hu. What?
Then pasuk vav would be a little strange. By Yom Ali Hamelech.
So the melech. No. That melech have no choice. You have no choice but to explain that melech refers to Daryavish. But who is this melech? So clearly, look at the Rishonim. Some Rishonim clearly say refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Daryavish is listening, according to Rashi, is listening to the Bakasha of Daryavish. Or Daryavish may think that Nehemiah is speaking to him. So we have this in the Megillah. Esther is really speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Achashverosh thinks that Esther is speaking to Achashverosh, to him. So you have the same type of, same opinion here in this pasuk. V'oimar LaMelech, let's learn that approach now. It's more of a Jewish type of approach. I said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Im al HaMelech Tov. If it's pleasing before the Melech Malchei Hamlochim, v'im yitav avdecho lefonech, if your servant is good in your eyes, asher tishlocheni el Yehuda, may you send me, may you dispatch me to Yehuda, Eloir, to the city Kivros Avosai, ve'evnena, and may you grant me the power and the ability and the permission to rebuild the city of Yerushalayim. This is not what Ezra accomplished. Ezra accomplished rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash, not rebuilding the city. And entirely, that's the very, we discussed this before, but there's a fundamental difference between the role of Ezra and the what?
So
So where did they live?
They lived in the vicinity, in the open land. It was, that's the learning of the Megillah. There's a very big difference in ancient times between the Arei Choyma and Arei Prozos. There were open cities and there were walled cities. If you were in a walled city, you had autonomy, you were protected, you felt at least a certain degree of protection. We have a very hard time relating to this in modern times. There's no difference, but to us, an open city, walled city, and not a walled city, it's all the same because of technology. But in ancient times, you live in a walled city, it's a whole different world. You're protected. If you look at these documentaries, they show these big cities, you get a little bit of an appreciation. If you live in a walled city, these massive walls, and there are gates, and it's closed, you feel secure. You're in an entirely different frame of mind. The whole life is different. You lived in an open city with no wall, you're always subject to bandits and troublemakers and ganovim and whatnot. So here, when Ezra arrived in Eretz Yisrael, the only focus was to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And they lived in an open city. But that was problematic for many reasons. Along comes the Chamini, says, no, we have to do something about it. It has to be a walled city. And that was his request to the king. Either he's just speaking directly to Dariyavesh, or he's speaking to Kadosh Baruch Hu, or like Rashi, would have a hybrid interpretation where he's speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's telling Dariyavesh to listen, and you'll know what you can do to assist me. Let's see Rashi Pasuk Hey and Pasuk Hey. Asher Tishlocheni Shetitin Li Rishus, grant me permission, La'alois Li Rushalayim V'Livnosa, and to build it. Pasuk Vav, Vayom Li HaMelech, the king responded, V'Hashegol Yosheves Etzla. Now what is a Shegol? There are many interpretations. Some learn it means the queen. It is a term that is used for the queen. And the word Shegol, the sherish of the word Shin Gimel Lamed, is not a pleasant word. It's not a kosher word. And what? Yishkolena. We even in the Torah, we don't even read. We say we change the word Yishkolen to Yishkovena. Yishkovena. We change the word. We don't even say the word. We say it's like a word that in English you would not say. So it's, why would we refer to the queen with such a word of shegel? If you look at the Mitsudos Tzion, the Hashegol, Hamalga, Hamyuchedes Loy Lemishkaf Hamishkol, the queen that's designated. So it means that he had other women. A king had many women, and some came to visit occasionally, but there was a woman that was miyuchid. The woman that was miyuchid for this thing called Mishkav HaMishkal is the queen. That's why she is the queen. So it is a borrowed term to refer to the queen. It's bizarre to us because it's not something that you would openly say. It's Chazal very critical of Yaakov Avinu. I mean, that critical of Yaakov Avinu, he said to Lavan, give me my wife, I've worked for you for 7 years, it's now time for me to have marital relations with my wife. Chazal, what? That's how Yaakov Avinu, Afilu Kal Shevakalim, would not talk like that. So they have to explain what it means. But here you have this, the same idea when it comes to the Persian king, Dariavish, and we're calling the queen the Hashegel Yosheves Etzlo. Now, all the Mepharshim say different interpretations, but Nebuchadnezzar, I believe, or by Nebuchadnezzar, other kings that were not exactly such a tzaddikim, the word Shegel refers to a dog, a female dog. And it was common that they had relations with female dogs. They were Mushchasim. And then a dog is not a human being. A dog is not a bardas that serves in the capacity as a queen, as someone that has any dignity. It's just nothing more than an object of taiva. Then that term would fit very well here. That's a very good term for a dog that a king has relations with. So that's, some want to suggest that that's true as here as well. That Dariyavesh also had a shegel, and indeed that's why one of the sources that is cited to show that Dariyavesh had a yerida. Dariyavesh was no longer considered to be a tzaddik at this point in time. When Dariyavesh took the throne, Sure, in the second year of his Malchus, he gave permission for the Bnei Yisrael to return and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And we learned not so long ago, that's why the years, his original years, were counted from Chodesh Nisan. The greatest honor you can give a non-Jewish king is to count his years from the Jewish months and not from the secular months, from Chodesh Tishrei. The non-Jewish kings are counted from Chodesh Tishrei, and the Jewish kings, their months are counted from Chodesh Nisan. Dayavesh is a non-Jewish king, but yet in the beginning of the Sefer, in Sefer Ezra, when he first takes the throne, his years are counted from the Chodesh Nisan, because he was a tzaddik in allowing Bnei Yisrael to go back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But here it's clear as day, in this pasuk here, when we began this parak, it says that it was the 20th year of Achodik pasuk Aleph, when we start with today, Vahib Achodesh Nisan. It was Chodesh Nisan, and it was Shnas Esrimli Artach Shast, in the 20th year. But in the Perek Aleph, if we go back to Pasuk Aleph, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, it says, Diri Nechemi ben Chakalya, Vahi Bachodesh Kislev, Shnas Esrim, in the 20th year, Vani Hayisi B'Shushan Habira. According to Rashi, these two things, according to everyone, these two things are, we're continuing. These two events happen in order. So first it's Chodesh Kislev in the 20th year, and now it's Chodesh Nisan in the 20th year. But wait a minute. Kislev, Teveh, Shvat, Adar, Nisan. When you get into Nisan, according to the Jewish counting, you're now in the 21st year. It's a new year. So why is he still being counted in the 20th year? The answer is Dar Yavesh, who is Artachshast, is a non-Jewish king. We calculate his years from Tishrei. We did not pass through Tishrei. But what's going on? In Sefer Ezra, we counted the years of Daryavesh according to when there we counted the year number 3 and 4, 2, 3 and 4, when he rose to power, his years are counted from Nisan. Here we're counting his years from Tishrei. So Chazal tell us, he soured. He lost his status of being a tzaddik during those years from the beginning of his Malchus to later. How do you know, where do you find the remez in the pasuk that he soured? Because it says, who is sitting by his side? A shegel. A shegel, a dog. A Yiddish king has a dog sitting by his side. Certainly not to live with a dog. So what's going on over here? So Chazal take this as a hint that he wasn't the same tzaddikul that he was originally. Mamela, he lost the kavod of his years been calculated from Nisan to the years of Tishrei.
It doesn't say. The Malbim says a very interesting thing over here. The shekel was Esther.
Esther, I'm going to get to that. Esther.
Really?
Yes, Esther. Yeah, we got it. So we have over here, at least so far, shekel is the queen. The queen. And the reason why it's a borrowed term, miyuchud for Mishkov, it's a dog, or as you quoted from the Malbim, this was Esther Hamalka, and that explains why he was so willing to let Nehemiah return to Yerushalayim and rebuild the walls, because his mother said, you better listen, Esther Hamalka, Purim is coming up, you have to do something for Klal Yisrael. So immediately, that's ten. Why was he so willing?
He was referring to her as a shekel.
It's a very good question. So it could be that it wasn't viewed, they were not so sensitive to these terms as we are. We are an Am Kodesh, holy. One of the reasons why it's called Lashon Kodesh is because there are no dirty words in the Torah. In the Torah, every single word there's no word to refer to a davar tame in the Torah. Everything in the Torah, all the words are holy words. The Goyim were not so sensitive to these things. They're not holy nations, so they're very explicit. They say things, they talk the way they see, exactly. So that dealing with Daryavish, the Persians are not known to be from the grace of Tzadikim. So that's what the queen is called. The queen is called a Shegel.
Nehemiah is writing this?
Nehemiah is writing so up, and Nehemiah is talking in their vernacular. He's recording the events the way they occurred, and there are more. I guess there are more insights. What?
Is it a quote?
So the king said that Shegel was sitting at Slo near the king. Okay, I don't know if it's an actual quote, but it is the question is better than the answer. I don't know. It's a tough question. And Mosai, so the question was, how long? Okay, very good. You want to go? When do you want to leave? And when are you coming back? In other words, I guess the king was a travel agent. That was his day job. His day job is a travel agent. Let's go to the computer, and when do you want to leave? When do you want to depart? And when do you want to arrive? Because we're going to see soon that he provided transportation. He provided an army, transportation, and documents, and passports, and visas, and you name it. Everything was given by the king. And that's why I got to get everything in order for you, get the paperwork in order. When are you leaving? Until when will you travel? When do you want to depart? And when are you coming back?
Round trip.
The pasuk is sure does not tell us the answer. It's hidden from us, the answer. We don't know what he said. He didn't know if I want to leave right now. I want to leave tomorrow. I want to leave next week. Maybe it's Yom Tov is coming up. I got to take care of some business. Maybe I have something important I got to do. The Torah doesn't tell us when he left. All it says is he asked him the question, when do you want to leave? When are you coming back? Vayitav lefnei hamelech. It was pleasing before the king. Vayishlocheni. He sent me the etino lo zman. And he gave him, and Nehemiah gave the time, Zman, how long he will leave for, when he will come back. Let's see Rashi quickly. Pasuk Vav. Vayomer li hamelech b'shah shedibur elai hamelech ha'isa ishtei hamalka. So here Rashi learns that the shegel is the queen, Yosheves etzlo, the hashegel ishtei kamalka. Ishtei hamalka kinyan shenemar shegaltia ule chantia. Okay, it's another word for a queen. There were two different words. One was the queen. One was a concubine, a pilegesh. Two different types of two. That we have that by. We have that by. By Koresh? I don't remember. One of the kings there. These are two words. The first is the shegel, is the queen, and then the concubines. Many women sat around the king. It's customary, these two words, shegaltia, the queen, ulechantia, is the pilegesh. The queen eitzel pilegesh, eitzel hapilegesh, noshav upilakshav, his wives and his pilakshim. Kimo malchus, another pasuk in Shir Hashirim, that the king, the queen, and the pilakshim. And mosayiya mahal lochecha, how long will be, when will you gonna leave? Mosay tirtze sheyehe mahal checha umas acha. When do you want to leave? When are you planning to depart? Umosai tashuv, umosai daitcha, lachzor, vayishlocheni, next Rashi, vadnasali rishus leches, venu lezman, nosati lo. Nehemiah says, I gave the king a time, zman, lachzor, when I will come back. It does not say when he's going to leave. Interesting, I don't know. That totally is left out of the pasuk when he's going to leave.
Besides, the pasuk seems out of order. It says, when are you leaving, when are you coming back? And it says it was fine by the king.
It's out of order.
And he gave the time.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. It's a very good point. I don't know. Let's see the mitzudos. Let's see some mitzudos here in Pasuk Vav. Gashegel, he also wants hamalka, hois azishavis. That's like, mosai kamu hu azman ashayiyah hamahalech. It's lemar, loleches uleshevesh shama. When do you want to go and to return? He repeats himself. And when will you return? So here, according to the Mitzudos, so the king is repeating himself. So the way it appears, according to the Mitzudos, the two words which really mean the same exact thing, is not learning like Rashi. Rashi appears to learn that the word mahalochacha means, when are you going to leave? When do you want to depart? Okay? That's how Rashi learns. Ad mosai yihye mahalochacha, mosai tirtze sheyehei mahalochacha umas acha. The Mitzudos appears to learn mahalachacha means how long will this take? It's not a question when do you want to depart. how long will the entire event, duration of the event, including the amount of time of your planned departure, the trip, how long do you anticipate the trip will take, how long will you be there, how long will it take you to arrive, and then he repeats himself, according to the Mitzvot, this is Tosefes Beyer. He's repeating himself, Umosai Toshuv really is included in the generic, in the casual expression of Mahalochicha. Vayitav, the next Mitzvot, Hatutav Sheilos Lefonav, Nosanli Rishos Lechas, Vani Kavati Lezman, Mosai, and I set him a time. Mosai should, and I told him exactly when I'm going to come back. He gave me permission. Okay, so we'll stop here. Let me see over here. He quotes Esther. Okay, fine. Yes.
Maybe from here we learn the min of the word Kever Avos. It speaks of going back
to the Kever Avos. Okay, interesting. Okay, true.